This is Dissecting Dragons, a speculative fiction podcast for writers and readers by writers and readers.
Welcome to Dissecting Dragons, the speculative fiction podcast for writers and readers by writers and readers. I'm Madeleine Vaughan.
And I'm Jules Ironside. This week, cheese and crackers, our favourite bad films at Christmas.
So I really think that we should begin by just saying a very merry Yuletide to you all.
Yes. And hopefully you're all, well, it won't quite be Christmas when you get this, but, you know, have an excellent Christmas. Hopefully you're not too exhausted to enjoy it.
Yes. We trust that the season is treating you well, that it is festive and merry, that you have bountiful loads of food, good cheer, and just in general are having a rather lovely time.
Well, you know,
if you're not, then boo-hoo.
If you're somebody who actually doesn't really like Christmas all that much, then I hope you're being left alone as you would wish to be.
Are you speaking from experience, Jules?
Not entirely.
What are your feelings of Christmas?
I enjoy it in small doses. Does that make sense? No, all the traditionally Christmas things like coming together in a big group and celebrating and being like really cheerful and everything. But yeah, in small doses, that's okay.
But you don't like that it starts before Halloween even gets its chance?
No, that irritates. I hate, you know, when you walk into a shop in July and there's Christmas cards on display.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a bit extreme, but that's no, I don't want to think about it yet. October is early enough to think about it, but, you know, November's really a bit more reasonable.
A bit more acceptable. Yeah.
What about you?
I'm the same. I mean, the way I see it is that I love Christmas. I love the Yuletide. The thing I love the most is the lights, the kind of the general sort of atmosphere. I mean, Christmas conceptually, when you look at it, is terrible.
Yeah.
It's a commercial nightmare. People are rude. It's also a time of great contradiction because people are rude, but they're also extra nice, but they're also really rude.
Yeah.
And it's cold, it's dark, which I don't necessarily mind, actually, to be honest, but it's a time when people get ill, it's the time which is busiest of the year, you suddenly put yourself under a lot of stress to make everything perfect, because it needs to be perfect, because it's Christmas, and then your expectation is ruined, because nothing is ever going to be perfect, you have family arguments. I'm not even going to talk about the suicide rate in January.
Oh god, I remember that.
Yeah, the financial difficulties. I mean, and you know, it's a terrible time to be lonely or to be homeless, you know, to live alone, to be elderly. Christmas, for a lot of reasons, is absolutely awful. And yet, I love the Yuletide. I really do. I love the lights. I love the atmosphere. I love the music. I love decorating the tree. That sense of family as you sort of come together. I love the little traditions that people have. I love buying gifts and exchanging them with people. I love just sitting there and watching. There's a whole kind of ritual which is so precious that I care about so much. And I think it's also nice because it's sort of something that really we should be thinking about all the year round. But it's that special time when you're reminded to be good to one another. And so far as I'm concerned, Christmas is about family and it's about stories. Because those dark nights when you've got that little yellow light twinkling and it's all dark outside and it's cold, but you're all huddled up and you've got all the vibrant festive colours inside and you're sitting there with a good book or in my case usually I'm sitting there with my laptop and I'm typing away and you can hear the crackle of the fire close by and there's a small glass of mead or wine next to you or a cup of steaming cup of tea. And there are other people in the room just doing their own thing. Maybe the TV's on in the background. You can hear the dulcet tones of Stephen Fry giving you amazing facts as QI plays in the background. And it's just perfect.
We have very different experiences of Christmas.
Well, you have a slightly bigger family than me. I say that.
Well,
you have more siblings.
Yeah, I know, and then they spawn, so I've got even more people around. And
there are no little ones in my family quite yet. On that side.
No. Well, I can guarantee what will happen is we'll go down on Boxing Day and I will end up covered in children and glitter. You know, pretty much like most days at the library, in fact. So
yep.
It'll be kind of like work. No, that's slightly unfair. That will happen. It'll be fun. I'll come back with a splitting headache because I'm not a loud person generally. I am an introvert and I find that all quite draining. It's worth it, but it is draining.
Yeah.
And it's good fun, and we play games. We don't put the television on. We do quizzes and things, and it all gets competitive, and it's very, very funny a lot of the time. But there are aspects of Christmas I don't like this continual entreaty to like indulge yourself and, as you say, spend money and be commercial and do all these other things. So
yeah,
there needs to be less of that, I think.
I agree. I do think I love Christmas games. I love Christmas games. We used to play charades. I don't know. What are you doing for Christmas itself, Christmas Day?
I will be at home making dinner, which sounds like which sounds a lot more domesticated than it actually is. No, we just spend it together as a couple generally.
Mm.
Which is like a couple and a cat.
Couple and a cat. That's perfect. That's the title of a movie. A couple and a cat. A good book.
Disney's probably already made it, you know. No, but we might watch a film. We generally do a. It's going to sound really naff if I tell you what we do. Just
no, like, God, no.
You catapulted into middle age in your 30s.
I'm heading up to spend Christmas with my dad and my grandfather. It's the first Christmas when my brother's not going to be there, which is going to be very weird.
Yeah.
But we always do stockings as well.
Yeah.
We buy little stocking fillers throughout the year and then have main presents. And I really like the way we do the stockings because we all just sit around and everyone takes one thing out of the stocking in this sort of circle, and we all stop to appreciate every gift that everyone gets. And I just think it's really quite nice, and we all cook the food together. And then after sort of opening the presents, there's this kind of, this great sort of lull period, between, because Christmas is just eating the whole day, eating, sleeping, opening presents. And there's this nice lull period where we're all just sort of in the same room, but we're all kind of sort of usually reading the books that we got or, you know, building the toys or, you know, things like that. And I really like it. And my grandfather and my father probably and my uncle will fall asleep. My uncle will probably fall asleep on the floor.
Are there not enough beds?
No, he's just, he'll sort of be sort of laying on the floor and he'll fall asleep for a little bit. He'll have a nap, and dad will fall asleep on the sofa. My grandfather will fall asleep in his chair. Probably me and my dad's girlfriend will, I don't know, play cards or something. It's just going to be nice. And I like writing in that atmosphere.
Yeah.
And I like it. And if I can convince them, we'll play a game of charades.
I think it might
be a bit dangerous to try and play Cards Against Humanity with my grandfather.
Yeah, absolutely. We usually have a Christmas quiz of some kind. And as I said, we sort of split up into random teams of two, because there are quite a lot of us, and it all gets quite competitive, because both of my sisters and I are quite competitive. I think we were brought up to be competitive and we didn't realise it, and then when you put us all together it gets really competitive.
Do you,
we're all with three quite competitive blokes as well.
Do you watch the Queen's speech
No. zero interest. I've never done. I don't think I've watched the Queen's speech since I was 10 years old. So that's probably, and that was by accident because my grandmother insisted on putting it on. So you know, that tells you how long ago it was.
I don't think I've ever watched it at all. But we always make a joke about it. Should we put on the Queen's speech? I think they usually put on Doctor Who, the Doctor Who special. But I don't really watch Doctor Who anymore, so I probably won't watch it this year. But I guess this sort of brings us on to the topic of Christmas films.
Yes.
Christmas films.
Because we talked about ghosts and goblins and things last year.
Yeah, we did. So let's talk about some terrible Christmas films. Quite recently, because I hadn't watched it in years, Sean and I watched Home Alone.
Yeah.
You've really started.
We're going to have such a hard time finding something to top that now. You realise?
I'm sorry, but let's just start with Home Alone and what a disaster it is as a film, and why it's so classic. I think I could definitely understand why I was able to enjoy it a lot more when I was a kid, but watching it as an adult, I was shocked pretty much the whole way through it about the general behavior of these adults. Because the reason I was spurred to watch it was that I saw a post on Tumblr from someone who said that a foreign friend of theirs sent them a message saying, "Jack is making me watch this horror film about two psychopaths trying to break into the house and beat up a neglected child on Christmas." It's Home Alone, and I thought, really, it's not that bad. But that's exactly what it is. It's terrifying. And I was just angry the whole way through about these terrible parents whose behaviour was so awful. So, so awful throughout. And I think the bit that gets me is that at the end, they haven't learnt their lesson. They all get back in, they're like, "Oh, Kevin, there you are." His mum sort of hugs him, just goes, "I'm very sorry." And I'm like, "No, you should be crying, okay, woman? You should be weeping, you should be holding him, you shouldn't be letting go." And then within like 2 minutes, his dad gets, he's like, "Oh, well done, well, welcome home." And she's like, "Oh, he managed to bring everyone home." And suddenly it wasn't even about Kevin anymore. And then they all went their separate ways, and Kevin was just left alone in the hall. They're like, "Oh my god, the only thing you were concerned about were child services finding out what terrible people you are."
I mean,
this is an awful film.
She is a bit sort of frantic in the middle, where she's like arguing the airport to try and get home, but
yeah, like, sort of, but I still don't have that much sympathy for her at all.
Well, any
as a human being, no, because she mostly just felt guilty, but like she didn't feel bad enough, as far as I'm concerned. She managed to forget her own child, and that's the thing, right? That I can understand. Okay, it might be possible. When they were getting in the cars, because they said that everyone had been counted and stuff like that, and the cars. But you had to get through security at the airport, okay? Now, and she figures out that they left Kevin at home. But airports are humongous places for little children, okay? He's, what, 8 years old, right? And not once during the whole time that they were in the airport did she think, "Let me just make sure that I've got my 8-year-old by my side while we're moving through this very busy, bustling place." I'm like, yeah, I get it. She has like 4 other children. But let me just make sure that my youngest, the 8-year-old child, is close to hand, because young children are prone to wandering, and they're small, and it's busy, and it's Christmas, and it's very easy to get lost. At no point did either parents think that. And as far as I'm concerned, it's one thing to accidentally leave your child at home. It's another thing to leave them in a different country, okay? They had to go through passport control, Jules. They had to go through passport control.
You've never been forgotten anywhere, have you, as a child?
No, I had been forgotten places. Well, actually, I don't really know. I would run off a lot when I was in supermarket and stuff like that. So it's less that my mother forgot me, more that I hid and she had to desperately try and find me while she sobbed and called the police because I was missing. True story. I was a terrible, terrible child.
Yes.
It was around the time those two young kids stole that toddler and kidnapped that toddler and killed him.
Okay, this is getting dark, but yes.
Yeah. Yeah, my mum clipped me into my buggy, turned around to pick up some clothes, turned back and I was gone, and I'd unclipped myself and run off. She was used to this, so at first she was relatively calm. Half an hour later, the police are involved, everyone's calling my name. I was just in the changing room, having the time of my life, because this was the best game of hide and seek I'd ever played. But my mother's reaction upon finding me was that she gave me a real slap, shouted at me, and then hugged me and sobbed and cried. And to be honest, she lost me for half an hour in a supermarket, not because through any fault of her own, but because I was a little shit, and that was her reaction. And I expect that from Kevin's mother, okay? I expect her to be a wreck.
I know a few times that, as a very small child, certain adults forgot to pick me up from school, so I was there after everybody went home, including the teachers. Whichever luckless teacher who was last out of the door. These were the days when they didn't lock the primary schools as well, so that was all good fun. You know now when you, well, perhaps you don't, but if you have to go into a primary school, you basically have to get somebody to buzz you in. But back in those days, you could literally just walk into a primary school, no trouble.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great.
So, I mean, I know I come from the era of latchkey kids where people worried about their children a lot less, but it sucks when you're 4 years old and you've been left at school. Having said that, I thought this was a normal thing that everybody occasionally got forgotten by their parents. So. Apparently
no, I
not.
Mean, I think it does happen, you know. Parents will lose their child at least once, and you will be forgotten. But I think there's being forgotten, and then there's being forgotten like Kevin from Home Alone, okay? That's a new level of forgotten. I mean, they left all the kids to get into their seats while they stayed in first class, right? They were in a different part of the aeroplane.
Yeah, that was a bit...
They got onto an aeroplane and they went, right, we're going to leave our 8-year-old who is not getting along with the rest of his siblings, and we're going to leave the siblings to take care of this 8-year-old, and they'll find their seats and they'll be fine. Like, the parents didn't even go to make sure the kids were sat down or anything like that. It's terrible parenting.
I have to say,
it's terrible parenting.
If I'd been a passenger on that plane, I'd have been furious, because if I'd been made to sit there with unattended children.
Yeah, exactly. So, So, it's a Christmas film, supposedly. And the smartest person in this film is the child, Kevin, who is brutal, but very, very clever. And I couldn't really get into the Christmas spirit of it, because all I could think about was that it's not Christmassy. It's about a child who desperately needs someone who actually is going to take care of him, because he's competent enough to be able to go and buy his own toothbrush and sort of get food and things like that, and is in very serious danger, and it hasn't even occurred to him. It doesn't even occur to him at any point to ask an adult for help, because the adults around him are so incompetent that he can't. Okay? So I thought, I'm going to watch this, it's going to make me feel all Christmassy, and in the end it didn't make me feel Christmassy at all, it just made me feel rage.
Okay, so that's Home Alone.
Home Alone. We're not even going to go into Home Alone 2. 3 is a bit different, because at least 3, the parents were, I think, so far as I remember, were relatively competent. It wasn't that they left their child, it was that the child got measles and so had to be at home.
Right.
Sorry.
You should maybe not watch that film again.
Yes, perhaps. Okay, so that's probably number one when it comes to Christmas films that just do not make me feel Christmassy.
Okay, mine then. I'll counter that with Gremlins.
Gremlins!
Seriously, honestly, I would never have considered that a Christmas film. Alan absolutely insists it is because it takes place at Christmas and you get Gizmo as a Christmas present, but it's like these horrific little homunculi are running around because he basically does everything wrong looking after this gremlin. Yeah, it's not Christmassy. I don't care if there are Christmas lights and that Gizmo. First of all, I have a real issue with people giving pets as Christmas presents, even if they are alien life forms. Which is basically what the gremlin is, you know, in canon.
Yes.
And, yeah, and with three instructions as well, you know, don't get it wet, don't feed it after midnight. It doesn't like light. Done those in the wrong order. Basically, the one that you don't ever do is you don't feed it after midnight, ever.
Yeah.
Because that's what turns them into the horrid scaly things. The evil gremlins. You don't get it wet because it basically undergoes mitosis and just breeds.
But the things that it breeds are also not very nice.
Well, no, they're furry until they get fed after midnight.
Yeah, sorry, I remember it.
But I think my real big beef with that film is the girl in the film doesn't like Christmas, and when he finally gets her to admit why, she said, well, actually, my dad just didn't come home on Christmas Eve, and then 2 weeks later there was this bad smell, and we were like, when we got someone out to look at the chimney, my dad had tried to climb down the chimney and fallen and broken his neck and was rotting away inside the fireplace kind of thing.
Yeah.
That's not feel-good Christmassy fun.
No. It's, I remember that bit now, yeah. It's pretty much the anti-Christmas as far as that's concerned.
But the other thing is, it's supposed to be sort of a comedy horror film. Well, I'm sorry, that's the most horrific thing in the film. The rest of the horror in it was kind of like, you know, meh, gremlins, meh. You know?
It's interesting, because it has a lot of the components that you can have in a Christmas film. Because obviously, you know, we've talked about this in the past, that Christmas is both a time for sort of the horror and the ghost stories, which are very popular around this time. But it's also about sort of families and people coming together. And in that sense, Gremlins does have that. Because it has that horror element. It's got that dark comedy. And it is a film about sort of family and friends sort of teaming up together to defeat this evil. And yet, you're quite right, that even though it literally does take place at Christmas, and it has a Christmas aesthetic to it, it isn't a particularly Christmassy film.
No, it's really not, is it? In my opinion.
In fact, I feel that actually it's sort of more along the lines, it takes the mick out of Christmas films.
I don't think it was intended to. That's the problem when it was originally made. But
I think it almost seems like a satire of Christmas films in some ways.
Okay, for our third one, may I put forward Die Hard?
Die Hard, right.
Die Hard is so many people's, particularly so many blokes' Christmas film of choice. You know, from a purely sort of moving wallpaper perspective, I can appreciate it. We watched it last year, Alan and I, in the morning when I did our usual, you know, cooked breakfast type thing. And it was actually kind of fun. He's got a point, you know, it's not Christmas until Hans Gruber has fallen off the financial building or whatever it's called. It's Alan Rickman, so obviously Hans Gruber is fallen.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, what it seems to be about to me is it's loosely set at Christmas, and it's about this disconnected, dissociated cop who cannot relate to his wife properly, who just basically starts this one-man army against a bunch of terrorists on Christmas Eve. In a tower.
In a tower.
And he had so many people killed. Seriously. You know, the entire film is just basically like an extension of male ego.
Again, it's an odd one because it does count as a Christmas film. A lot of people thoroughly feel it is a Christmas film. But you're right. It what exactly makes it a Christmas film? Is it just because it comes out at Christmas? People are just used to seeing it Christmas.
I think a weird thing is a lot of people feel that all the explosions and everything are quite Christmassy.
Fireworks, I guess.
I guess.
You know, I've never watched it the whole way through.
It is kind of a fun film, but it falls into those same categories of late 80s, early 90s films, whereby you've got this typical white male protagonist, I think, is part of the problem. So I have difficulty like watching it without making snarky comments about the entire process. But maybe that's the fun, I don't know.
It's definitely a film of the era, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'm going to counter with one which doesn't even take place at Christmas.
Oh, okay.
Actually, I'm going to counter with two which don't even take place at Christmas. One is Singing in the Rain.
Okay.
Now, you wouldn't think of that as a Christmas film, would you?
Well, I wouldn't necessarily, but then there was, you know, back before we had Sky TV and various other things, they gave you a slew of, you know, great films at Christmas.
Yeah.
You know, films you didn't normally see at Christmas, so you used to get lots of musicals then, and this is back in the days when you couldn't buy Star Wars on VHS tape, even. You just couldn't buy it. So occasionally Empire Strikes Back would come on at Christmas, I'd be really excited, and it's like, yes, Empire Strikes Back kind of thing. I can record it on a videotape, I'll get a blank tape especially for it.
So I we used to do that, and so we had all the Christmas adverts in between.
I mean, you wouldn't tolerate it now, would you? But I always think Empire Strikes Back as a Christmas film, probably because, well, A, there's a lot of snow at the beginning, but B, also because it was always on at Christmas. It was the one in the middle that they always put on. They didn't put the other two on quite as much.
Yeah, it was... But that's why I think of Singing in the Rain as a Christmas film, because I remember watching it at Christmas. And it has that, there's something about old films like that that make you feel Christmassy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The way they talk, the pronunciation, that fake pronunciation, of that fake accent, you know, that doesn't actually exist anywhere.
But the Americans, you know what I mean? Trying to do a proper received pronunciation accent.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah. The way, and you know, it was the way they spoke, which was just literally for, it wasn't any accent that existed in reality. It was specifically for films. So it's the way they speak, the dancing, the general aesthetic of those films, which just makes me think of Christmas. Cause and probably because, they just have those old films around that time, which would be playing. And I just really love it. And so when I see that kind of thing, the humour, the dancing, and also possibly because it has that general feel-good feeling to it as well, that I associate with a lot of Christmas films.
Yeah.
So I really do think of Singing in the Rain as a Christmas film, even though it doesn't actually take place at Christmas.
I'm going to reverse that slightly.
Because
I know that White Christmas actually is a Christmas film, but it doesn't feel like one to me. Probably because like 90% of the film isn't actually about Christmas at all. It's about putting on this show and getting people into, is it Vermont?
I don't know.
Anyway, there's various little subplots and things in there, and there's a sort of love story, which is really quite bizarre. It ends with that song, White Christmas, which I suppose makes it kind of a Christmas film, but they're all about being on this like Christmas show, to encourage people to come to a ski resort type thing.
Yeah.
But there's no snow, so they're trying to do something else, and then obviously it does snow at the end, because why wouldn't it? These things solve themselves. Yeah, it's kind of a feel-good film. I think when you get so many, when you get musicals where the songs really are just part of like an ensemble piece, I can find them, the film goes on quite a long time, and I feel that with White Christmas, to be honest. It drags.
Yeah.
Because the songs don't actually move the plot along, so it's kind of like, meh.
Yeah, get on with it. So I'm gonna counter that. Again, another film which feels kind of Christmassy, but isn't actually a Christmas film. And that is Rise of the Guardians. Have you seen it?
I have seen it once. No, that doesn't strike me as a Christmas film, but
does it not?
No.
I always see it as sort of Christmassy, and probably because it's got some very specific imagery in it. A lot of the scenes with the Guardians when they're together take place at Santa's grotto, at his workshop, rather. Father Christmas is obviously in it a lot. And, of course, you have Jack Frost. So there's a lot of snow as well, and it's about believing, and it's about magic. And so these are things which are kind of very, very Christmassy, and you see, and there's even Christmas kind of imagery within it. And it makes me laugh because it actually takes place at Easter. That's a story. But it definitely doesn't feel like an Easter story. It feels like a Christmas story.
They were really covering all their bases on when they released that film, weren't they?
Yeah. And when I first saw it around, yeah, it was around Christmas. It was around winter. So, it's a Christmas film with Father Christmas in it, which isn't actually set at Christmas at all.
Have you noticed how there are some Christmas films specifically aimed at children, I think, but they're actually really quite sinister? I'm thinking of Jack Frost, and I'm also thinking of The Polar Express, which is really, really creepy.
Yeah, let's talk about Polar Express, because I remember seeing that, and I wasn't altogether taken. I was hoping to come away with a warm feeling in my chest, and instead I just felt a bit cold and indifferent.
Well, I definitely felt cold. I think part of it was the uncanny valley sort of effect of it, because they hadn't really... The animation wasn't quite there when they made the Polar Express. And it was supposed to make you feel all sort of something magical happens at Christmas. I don't know, I found the whole train conductor thing really quite disturbing. It's like, come away, we'll take you on a trip. Yeah, but where? He never asks where. He just gets on the train in his pyjamas. It was less sinister when the boy went off with the snowman, to be honest. At least he'd made the snowman. Maybe I'm coming at this from a strange angle, but I don't want to say the word grooming, but it kind of like occurs. I've lost you,
honey. It's just, at least he made the snowman, and all I can just see Frankenstein screaming.
See, Frankenstein should have tried snow instead of stitching criminals together. Can you imagine if Frankenstein was supposed to be a Christmas film?
Oh, brilliant.
So, yeah, anyway.
But yeah. It was also the kind of the end of the Polar Express is really sort of kind of awful, because he has his little sister and they can both hear the bell at the end, and then he says at the end that his sister can no longer hear it, but he still can, and I'm like, why didn't his sister get to go? What is the basis for choosing these children? Why are they allowed to go, but no one else is? It's just, I don't know.
There's something very, I don't know. And it's been a very long time since I saw the film Jack Frost, where, you know, the dad dies and then comes back and possesses a snowman for a bit, which, you know, I have all kinds of problems with.
It's, that has one of the most awful, but at the time, that has classic lines in it. One is the, but dad, did you just call me butt dad? I'm gonna call you butt boy. Bye butt family! Which was the funniest thing in the entire world, when I was a kid. And it has that terrible, terrible line where the bully, having discovered that this living snowman is in fact this child's father, he says, "Snow dad's better than no dad." I was like, oh my god! I really liked it as a kid, though. I haven't watched it as an adult, and I don't think I ever will, because I think that it might kill me. But I did enjoy it as a kid, and you could really understand why his parents... Because as a kid, we were watching, and you're like, oh god, why would his mum and his mum's boyfriend take take him seriously, you know, they're just dismissing him, they think he's crazy, and I'm like, yeah, if my child came up to me and was there like, the snowman is your deceased husband, I too would be concerned. And if my child then ran away with said snowman, I would be incredibly concerned.
Well, yeah, actually. Part of the problem, obviously, was when that film came along, I was already an adult, and I was like, this is just disturbing. But it's the same with things
yeah,
like...
Yeah, definitely one for kids.
Have you ever seen The Santa Claus? That's the one where he accidentally knocks Father Christmas off the roof. And...
Oh, gosh, yes! We watched it the other night. And at least, I think of all of them, that probably was the most Christmassy one that I've ever seen. That I've watched so far that didn't... I mean, it annoyed me in some respects, but it didn't annoy me nearly as much as Home Alone and other films. I think it's quite funny. With its terrible special effects, and I particularly like when he shaves and he looks in the mirror and the beard just goes whoop, it just regrows.
Yeah.
And when he goes to see the doctor, and the doctor's like, "What's your diet?" He's like, "Milk, cookies." He's like, "Yeah, well, maybe don't eat just milk and cookies." He's like, "All right, let me listen to your heart," and it starts like beating out jingle bells or something.
Yeah, it's
I just thought it was
film.
Really funny. But yeah, these are all Christmas films of a certain era.
Yes, they definitely are. Okay, some Christmas films that, you know, are personal to you, that do actually work. Mm-hmm. One that you're going to laugh at me, one I watch every year, and it's Christmassy for me, don't ask me why, is Little Women.
Little Women! Huh, I've never actually seen it.
Oh, it's worth watching. I mean, okay. I kind of have a love-hate relationship with the books anyway, because, okay, there's something very charming about them, but at the same time, you feel like Louisa May Alcott's, like, preaching at you for, like, all the way through the entire series. there's all this... I think, to be honest, the film probably combines the best of Little Women and Good Wives, the first two books, together. And
yeah.
Then you don't need to read them. You don't really need to read those two books because it cuts out a lot of the really preachy stuff.
All right, I might have to give that a go. So that's a Christmas film for you.
It is. I mean, it does actually start at Christmas, at the very beginning of the film. It covers something like, I don't know, probably about 10 years of their lives.
Mm.
Altogether.
It's something about old stories, isn't it? Just feel Christmassy.
Yeah possibly. Another one for me, and you're going to laugh probably, is While You Were Sleeping, which I still find that funny. Even now, I still find it really funny. And I think it's because the main character is just a genuinely sweet, nice person.
Aww. I think... Well, I've never seen it, so I can't comment, but I... This is making me think about, you know, you mentioning Star Wars earlier.
Yeah.
And I think that you're right, that actually Star Wars is now, especially people feeling very Christmassy about Star Wars, because, of course, they keep releasing the new Star Wars films at Christmas.
Yeah. And, of course, Disney have got the franchise now, so there's a good chance we're going to get Star Wars films at Christmas now until I die, so...
Hooray! It's just what we wanted. Kill the franchise. Beat it until it dies, and then beat it a little bit more. Flog a dead horse. There's another one, which again came out at Christmas, which is Frozen.
Yeah, it is sort of a Christmassy film for me, but it also isn't.
Yeah. I mean, it takes place in summer.
Yeah, for a start.
That's the whole point, is that it's summer.
She does make an eternal winter during that time.
But... Yeah, she does, but it is still summer. Supposedly. But, again, the only reason we can actually say it's Christmassy is because it has those themes of family and it's got that wintry landscape.
Yeah.
That's it.
Oh, they do That's build it. A snowman.
Oh, and they build a snowman, yeah.
Which then comes to life.
This is true. This is true. But I mean, you can actually build a snowman pretty much any time of year if you have snow.
Oh, yeah, this is true.
We watched a film last year, which was Arthur Christmas.
I've never
And
seen it.
James McAvoy, Hugh Laurie, very British. And you could tell it was a British film, because it kind of dealt with this family dynamic, which felt that you see in American films and stuff like that, but it felt distinctly British, particularly in this sort of the way they did the sort of the bumbling, not quite with it father, who just is just not close to his children at all enough to sort of notice.
Yeah.
It felt very typically British as a British sort of story. And it's obviously very Christmassy because it's about Christmas and it's about delivering toys and I did enjoy it, but again I have this thing that I only get Christmassy feel from a very select few number of films, and it didn't. I loved it as a story, and it was a good Christmas story, but I didn't get that kind of that warm, fuzzy feeling that you get, and that you usually get from watching a film which is has really sad moment, and then kind of actually has the sort of the end. The end is ultimately happy. And I am going to admit something now, which I'm not proud of. But I do quite like watching those terrible Hallmark Christmas films because they're just, it's like buying standard cake, if that makes sense. But you know what you're gonna get, and the recipe's always gonna be the same, okay? And so I watched one with Katie McGrath in it, called A Princess for Christmas, and stuff like that, where
Yeah.
an ordinary girl goes in, she falls in love with someone who turns out to be a prince, and it's Christmas, and they start dating, and something's more complicated, and there's a jealous other woman who's of his class and who he should be with, and you know exactly what's going to happen, and it's so utterly predictable, and the writing is awful, and the acting is questionable, and the jokes are terrible. And at the end of it, they have the whole sort of, but we should at least have a Christmas tree. It's the most important part. And then they kiss, and it's just so ludicrous. And yet, Jules, it's like cocaine. I cannot get enough of it. Not that I take cocaine, but Hallmark Christmas movies probably is about the same.
It basically sounds like Mills and Boone in film form.
It's just, I just really like it because what I do is I play it in the background while I'm wrapping presents or I'm making presents or stuff like that, and it's just there, and it's just so easy to watch. I don't even need to pay attention to half of it because the plot is so predictable. And you get them at the end, and she's always wearing the nice dress, and it's all nice and happy, and it's snowing, and it's magical, and you're like, yay! And I get really Christmassy from watching it.
Oh, one we watched, okay, admitting this, one we watched the other night. We watched The Holiday,
Yes!
which is, I think, a couple of steps above A Princess for Christmas or whatever it was.
Just a couple.
Just a couple. I like that because the two character journeys in that are quite satisfying, I think. Even though both the main characters are really irritating to start with in their own respective ways. You've got the one who's like just has real difficulty falling for anyone, and you have the other one who just cannot get over this bloke. He's a complete shitbag. He really is.
Yeah.
Just manipulating her the whole way. And for those of you who haven't seen it, they decide they're going to swap houses for Christmas and go some, you know, to one thing. Yeah, no, Los Angeles, God, any other ones in the Cotswolds. And it actually really looked like it was filmed sort of around here with the snow and everything. And it's just, it's funny and it's quite good fun as a film. And I mean, you know what's going to happen a mile off. It's not a difficult plot to figure out at all. But the way it's delivered is actually really quite engaging.
Yeah.
As in, Alan sort of went, I'm not sure about this. And I'm like, well, is this or A Nightmare Before Christmas? And you're like, okay, let's do The Holiday then.
Yes, now.
I'm really enjoying it.
A Nightmare Before Christmas. Is that a Halloween film or is it a Christmas film?
For me, it's a Christmas film, but it doesn't necessarily give me a Christmassy feel.
No. And I think that's the distinction, is that there are Christmas films, and then there are Christmas films.
Yeah.
And yeah, Nightmare Before Christmas is a Christmas film, but I don't get that Christmassy feel from it at all.
Yeah.
Whereas you can have Christmas films, which aren't Christmas films, but you get that Christmassy feel from it.
Okay, random, very weird, and quite an old film, but it's a Christmassy film for me.
Mm-hmm.
The Wolves of Willoughby Chase.
Okay. Justify this.
It's so old. Well, I don't know if you've ever read the book. The book's probably creaking with age now as well, but... It was one I really liked as a child, and it's very imaginative in, you know, the fact that there are wolves in England still in the 18th century, for example. We actually, like, hunted them to extinction about 600 years ago, so that wasn't true. These two girls, they're cousins, and one of the girls comes from a very, very wealthy family, so she has her cousin come to live with her. They're about sort of 10 or 11 years old. And there's a local boy who's, I don't know, basically a bit of a, he's a tinker.
Mm-hmm.
But for lack of a better word, his parents are gone. He lives out in the woods, as you do. No child services in the 18th century.
Nope.
And then her parents decide they have to go away. And, they leave the two girls in the charge of this governess, who turns out to not be very trustworthy. Spoiler alert. The governor sells off all their toys and everything, and the parents' ship goes down, so apparently they're orphans, and then they get put in what appears to be sort of a workhouse. And, you know, it's just an adventure story from there, how they get the boy to help them escape, and, you know, they're running from wolves and all sorts. I don't know why it's a Christmas film for me, but there is a lot of snow. I think it's because at the very end, you know, the family all comes back together, and spoiler alert again, the parents aren't actually dead.
Hooray!
Hooray! And the wicked governess and her gentleman caller friend, who could have come straight out of a Dickens novel, get what's coming to them. So, as I said, it's such an old film. I don't think it's even a particularly good film, but it's always been a Christmassy film for me.
See, I like watching Sherlock Holmes and Miss Marple.
Yeah.
And yeah, and when I say Sherlock Holmes, I mean the Jeremy Brett Sherlock Holmes. I think that it is that. It's that old fashioned, the old kind of Victorian, just any films like that which are set, you know, in the past feel very Christmassy to me. And I can probably tell you why. And I think that it's only natural that as sort of our episode draws to a close, we talk about the film which is truly, for the both of us,
yep.
A Christmas film. And I think we've both been saving it up. And that is, of course, The Muppets Christmas Carol.
It is the ultimate Christmas film of all time.
Sean and I are watching it this evening because we're celebrating our Christmas early before we go separate ways. And yeah, it's going to be our little Christmas evening. It's an amazing film. I think it's probably the best version of the Christmas Carol that
yep.
I know of.
Yeah, I don't think it hasn't ever really been beaten. It's really true to the spirit, but it cuts out bits of Christmas Carol that are really squeaky that probably Dickens shouldn't have written himself.
Yeah, but then Dickens was paid by the word, so he really
he needed the money.
I too would have sentences that long if I was.
I was more thinking about things like, you know, I should have liked the license, the lightest license of a child, but to have been man enough to have known its worth. When he was talking about looking at the daughter he might once have had, and thinking about, you know, holding on to her hair like a child was. There's some very creepy mixed father-daughter stuff in that.
Well, good thing I've never read the book.
But no, Muppet's Christmas Carol captures all the rest of the best bits of it. And the sense that, actually, it's less that Scrooge is mean with his money, although that's certainly the big symptom and symbol of his real state of mind. It's the fact he won't let anybody in. He won't do anything to benefit anybody else. He's actually a burden on society in general, not because of the money issues, but because he refuses to benefit anyone.
Yeah. And I love it because in a lot of the other ones, you get the sense that Scrooge only turns his way because he gets afraid at the last minute.
Yeah.
But that isn't the case. You know, it's the story of a man confronting a traumatizing past, finding the root of why he behaves in the way that he behaves, and then sort of learning about what Christmas actually means. And you get the sense that he's become really a changed man after he's been with the second spirit, the spirit of Christmas present.
Yeah.
Who he really likes.
Yeah.
He has a really good time, and he gets quite upset, you know, when he sees the way that his family believe see him, and but then he goes to the Cratchits.
Yeah.
Yeah. House, and you know, it's. I think it's really nicely done, and who would have thought Michael Caine would be such a fantastic?
I know, he was awesome, and he thing is. Sometimes you see people playing opposite the Muppets and they look overwhelmed. You know, they can't quite get into the groove. And yet he just plays the whole thing straight as though he's acting with every other normal actor instead of lots of puppets.
Yeah, exactly. And it's brilliant. He's fantastic. I mean, he's not perhaps my favourite person at the moment, but I can't deny that he's brilliant in this film. And it is just such a Christmassy film, and you do get that Christmas feel from it. It's got everything. It's got the moral, it's got the aesthetic, it's got the scary parts. It's the only film with puppets that I can tolerate.
Really?
I hate puppets, Jules. I really hate puppets.
Everybody likes the Muppets. Even people who think they don't like the Muppets like the Muppets.
I.
What about Labyrinth?
No, Jules, we've had this discussion. I'm terrified of Labyrinth. I've never watched it. To be honest, I can get through most of it until it gets to the birds removing their own heads and stuff like that. Those things scare the crap out of me. I hate them. I genuinely feel sick watching them. Everyone's like, oh, it's such a funny song. And I'm like, no, I really hate it. And don't even talk to me about the Dark Crystal, okay? I will scream.
Okay.
so, but I like the Muppets Christmas Carol, and I think the reason I kind of like the Muppets Christmas Carol is that, and I can deal with the Muppets, is that they're not actually trying to be people, mini people. They're animals and things which are very clearly not people.
Yeah.
Even the ones which are people shaped are clearly very much not people shaped. You know.
Yeah.
If they were, I can deal with the ones that are people shaped because the majority of they aren't people shaped, and that's okay. If they were all people-shaped, I'd probably feel a bit sick the whole way through. Because I just don't like the disproportions. It just... Anyway, so it's the only puppet film that I can really tolerate and that I enjoy. And it really does have everything. The humour, that scariness, the moral, that ultimate good feeling. And at the end, just the end, you just feel warm and happy and Christmassy, and it's got the songs, and I like it. I really like it. So I think far by far the Christmas film of the year, and probably will be for a very, very long time, is The Muppets Christmas Carol.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And about all we've got time for our Christmas episode.
So to all of our listeners, we wish you an absolutely wonderful Yuletide. We hope that your holidays really are full of joy, and that you have a chance to really enjoy yourself, to be with your families and your friends, and just enjoy a good book or enjoy a good film while you're at it as well. This is the season of the story, so take advantage, and we will speak to you guys next week.
Technically.
Yeah,
thanks, guys. Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to Dissecting Dragons, the speculative fiction podcast. You can follow our podcast at podbean.com or from iTunes. For more information, visit our Facebook page at www.facebook.com/dissectingreaders. Or check out our author websites at jaironside.com and madelinevaughan.com. Please note, no dragons were harmed during the making of this podcast.